Great. Well, thank you, Felicia, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the JLEN full year results presentation for the year ending 31st March 2020. I'm Chris Holmes, co-head of the investment advisory team for JLEN, and I'll take you through the first part of the presentation to introduce the highlights for this reporting period, our approach to ESG, and a snapshot of the current portfolio. Chris Tanner will take over after that to take you through in more detail about the performance of our assets, our current valuation assumptions and financial performance, and then I'll wrap up at the end with a market outlook before taking any questions, which we'll, of course, be happy to do. Now, we appreciate you can't physically see us this year, but hopefully our voices can be distinguished apart, and we'll do our best given the circumstances. So, as you know, we transferred the advisory team from John Laing to Foresight just under a year ago. The whole team is still present and now fully integrated into the wider Foresight business. And as a fund manager with extensive experience investing into and managing renewable energy and infrastructure assets, Foresight has been able to enhance the service provision to JLEN through aspects such as deal origination across Europe, asset management across core sectors of solar, wind, and AD, and support through a dedicated IR team. Now, a quick recap on JLEN before we dive into the presentation. JLEN is an environmental infrastructure fund with a broad investment mandate that enables us to consider a wide range of technologies and geographies, with a preference for predictable revenues that are backed by contracts or subsidies. At the year-end, the JLEN portfolio comprised 30 assets across five technology sectors in onshore wind, solar, anaerobic digestion, waste and wastewater management, and most recently, hydropower. And we've strengthened our position as the most diversified fund within the listed renewable infrastructure sector. Net asset value for this reporting period has declined by 4.3 pence per share from the last published NAV at the end of 2019 to 97.5 pence per share, and there's a bit more on NAV progression later on in the presentation. And despite the challenges around COVID, JLEN has delivered on the proposed dividend of 6.66 pence per share for this reporting period, and have declared a dividend for the full year to the 31st March 2021 of 6.76 pence per share, which is an increase of 1.5%. Now, ESG continues to be an important aspect of JLEN's activities. We're delighted that JLEN was awarded the prestigious Green Economy Mark by the London Stock Exchange and has won industry awards for its investment focus in this area. Last year, JLEN set out its approach in detail with its first ever ESG report. And this time, it has sought to build from that foundation to incorporate a set of ESG objectives for the first time, which you can see here. And these objectives define the approach the fund wishes to take in all of its activities. And over the course of this coming year, the board will seek to develop a series of KPIs that can track performance against each of these objectives to complement those KPIs that are already present for the fund. And we continue to commission independent analysis undertaken by Aardvark Consulting on every single asset in the portfolio, all of which are available on our website, which adds credibility to the impressive statistics that you can see here. And when we aggregate the environmental benefits across the portfolio, we have some impressive figures. Over 900 gigawatt hours of renewable electricity generation, 115,000 tons of material recycled from household waste, 245,000 tons of organic fertilizer produced by our AD plants, and £350,000 contributed to the communities around our facilities. And this is a brief snapshot of the year. The company has grown and the market cap is now of a size that will promote JLEN to the FTSE Russell 250, which we're naturally very pleased about. Our share price ended at 111 in the period, closed at 115 yesterday, the price at which we completed a successful equity raise back in late February. The company has delivered good dividends at 6.66 pence per share and has made a number of acquisitions, which we'll come onto on the next slide. We made three asset acquisitions in this period. I'll describe the Yorkshire Hydro and Biocollector assets in a moment. Our second acquisition during the year was a crop-fed anaerobic digestion plant in Methwold in Norfolk of similar size and nature to our other agricultural biogas plants. It's also located close to our Egner AD plant where we can benefit from the portfolio sharing of feedstock, spares and operational learning. We have made a commitment to the Foresight Energy Infrastructure Partners Fund. As an LP in this fund, JLEN can benefit from exposure to a higher returning construction stage portfolio in Europe without the concentration risk on any one particular asset. And since the year end, we've increased our portfolio further in the agricultural AD facilities with the acquisition of a co-shareholding in the Peace Hill plant up in Scotland. Now, the next few slides are case studies on our hydroacids and food waste AD plants. These are three new sectors for the fund when you include the addition of the battery storage facility, which further diversify the portfolio in terms of exposure to climatic conditions and market dynamics. Yorkshire Hydropower encompasses two sites, one at Kirkthorpe on the River Calder with a 500 kilowatt turbine, and another at Flyburg on the River Don with a 260 kilowatt turbine. And we have co-located a 1.2 megawatt battery at the Flyburg site and have planning permission to construct a similar battery on the other site. And the revenues from the hydro plant are strongly supported by inflation-linked government subsidies, and the battery gives us a fantastic insight into this technology and the markets that it can contract into, something that will inform us of possible further investments into this sector. Our third acquisition during the year was an investment into the BioCollector's food waste AD plant and associated collections business. And the addition of a food waste asset brings together our experience in managing both anaerobic digestion assets and waste management facilities. And the biogas plant has a 10 megawatt output capacity and has been operating for a number of years, as with all our other AD plants that we've acquired, and produces a biogas from the food waste that it digests, which is used in a number of ways, primarily gas is used to inject into the gas network to earn a tariff under the renewable heat incentives subsidy and revenues from wholesale gas sales. Some of the gas is used in on-site CHP engines that earn a feed-in tariff and supply green electricity to be used by the plant. And additionally, a small proportion of gas is used to power a growing fleet of biogas-powered trucks that collect the feed waste material. And the strong inflation-linked subsidy support equates to around 70.4% of its revenues. And the collections business sources the waste streams for the biogas plants. These are primarily household caddy bins contracted through a local authority and bin collection services to the commercial and industrial sector. Now, since the start of the COVID outbreak, the commercial and industrial waste has dropped significantly. There was also a temporary drop in the local authority material, but this has picked up back to budget. And whilst the impact of COVID-19 has affected this asset more than others in our portfolio, we have reacted swiftly and in a way that not only limits the impact, but also protects the safety of the staff on site and those employed in the collections business. We've also taken the opportunity to bring forward some planned maintenance as the impact of temporary shutdowns will be less at this time. So notwithstanding the current circumstances, our view remains that this is an asset class with strong, long-term, positive underlying market dynamics as the country moves towards increased resource reuse, both in commercial and household sectors. Slide 10 depicts where the JLN assets are, very heavily weighted towards the UK with two wind farms in France. The portfolio is also fully operational now as our upgrading activity on the Vulcan AD project has been successfully completed. This slide provides a clearer picture of how the portfolio is constructed, with a number of assets shown per asset class and in turn that sector's contribution to our overall megawatt capacity. We don't target a particular sector mix for the fund. More so an investment discipline around our acquisitions to ensure we are adding high-quality assets that broaden the diversity and minimises the impact on any one climatic condition or market dynamic. Slide 12 provides some additional analysis. Across the portfolio as a whole, wind remains the largest segment by value at 36%. With our continued activity in the AD sector, this is now the second largest at 25%, closely followed by solar at 23%. And whilst we continue to see some attractive opportunities in AD and the assets are performing well, we are now being very selective in how we add to this growing element of the portfolio. Our biocollectors asset is counted within the waste and wastewater category as it more closely relates to this market than agricultural AD. Now, JLN's portfolio is relatively young, with average remaining asset life of just under 19 years, and it continues to have a strong proportion of inflation-linked revenues, with 71% of distributions received by the fund having inflation-linked revenues as their source. And this stems from the different types of revenues earned by the portfolio, ROCs and FITs, as you'll be familiar with, from wind and solar assets, but also RHI, Renewable Heat Incentive, subsidy for the ADs, and concession-based payments for the waste and wastewater assets. And as we have grown our AD portfolio and experienced the decline in power prices, the inflation-linked payment proportion has increased up from 65% this time last year. Now, this slide is really helpful in explaining why a diversified portfolio can bring many benefits. Firstly, it reduces reliance on one weather source, be it wind or sunshine or rain, And as we all know, the British weather is quite unpredictable, and over the last few years, we have experienced more extreme weather patterns. Indeed, the Met Office review for 2019 states just that, a year of extremes, record-breaking heat and rain, along with notable spells of cold and windy weather, have all been prominent. The chart on the right-hand side shows the monthly production across four asset classes as a percentage of their yearly total. And you can see that solar follows an expected pattern of peaking during the summer months. Wind has a higher production in the winter months. Hydro fluctuates throughout the year, depending on rainfall. And AD output is unaffected with a welcome steadiness across the 12 months. And it is for these reasons that we believe a diversified portfolio is a resilient one and one that can seek to reduce the impact of these climatic variables. Diversification offers the opportunity to contract with a range of different companies, technology partners and stakeholders, reducing the reliance on any one corporate. It reduces exposure to the policies of a particular country. And whilst the portfolio is heavily invested in the UK currently, diversifying into European countries will reduce the concentration risk and allow us to capitalise on different green policies as we see countries emerge from COVID-19 seeking to stimulate economies and industry sectors. We have one of the lowest exposures to wholesale power price risk of the listed renewable funds, which has been achieved through investing into different sectors with different technologies and revenue sources. And finally, a diversified portfolio can demonstrate a far wider impact in relation to environmental and social benefits. I'll hand over to Chris at this stage.
Hello, everyone. Sorry not to be with you in person, but on the plus side, it means you can listen in your pyjamas. I'll take you through the next few slides on the performance of the different parts of the portfolio, the factors going into the portfolio valuation, power prices, and the changing revenue mix, and then some high-level financial information for the period. We'll have a look in more detail at how each of the technologies in the portfolio have done in a moment, but first of all, a recap of our COVID-19 response. So all members of the investment advisory team are now working from home, and we've adapted well to this change. The asset management team engaged with counterparties right across the portfolio from the outset of the pandemic, assessing the extent of risks and taking steps in conjunction with service providers as necessary. And the key concern here, besides the safety of individuals, was to minimise the disruptions associated with getting people to site and also supply chain delays. Happily, the large majority of the portfolio has proved to be quite resilient to the negative effects of the COVID pandemic, as seen in other sectors of the economy. And here we should also recognise the efforts of our service providers and operating partners who have done a good job in keeping these essential infrastructure assets working. Here is a snapshot of portfolio performance. On an aggregated basis, generation is above budget for the year, and the high-level message is that this has been another year of solid performance. The large majority of the assets are performing well. We're continuing to develop and deliver asset enhancements, and we're on top of the small number of issues that are present within the portfolio. So slide 16 is on wind, so the largest part of the portfolio by value and also the largest in terms of energy generated. So we're quite pleased with the way the wind portfolio has performed. The majority of wind farms have met or exceeded their expected level of availability. Two of the wind farms operated by Senvion, the German turbine manufacturer that filed for insolvency during the period, are among those that are below budgeted availability. But since the acquisition of Senvion's European operating business by Siemens Gamesa, we've seen a marked improvement in their performance. We have a good relationship with Siemens Gamesa, and we feel that these wind farms are back on track. Wind resource has been good over the period as a whole. The first half of the year was slightly below budget, but wind resource was particularly strong in the final quarter, leading to the wind portfolio being 4% up for the year as a whole. And we continue to improve sites where possible. This has worked particularly well at the Carscrew wind farm that suffered in previous years from poor availability due to recurring faults. Upgrade works have rectified the faults, and we now feel justified in increasing its expected availability and energy yield. We've also achieved cost savings across the portfolio, and we feel that there are further areas where we can apply this discipline. Slide 17 is on the Agri AD portfolio, and this has continued its track record of good performance, with gas generation being 4% above budget in energy terms. The Vulcan upgrade completed in the period, and the expanded plant has been regularly flowing in excess of 900 cubic metres of gas per hour, so that's more than double its original output. Further upgrade opportunities exist for Vulcan and for other plants within the portfolio, and this is one of the advantages for gas-to-grid plants, such as JLEN's portfolio, with the ability to increase production without the constraints of an electrical grid connection. So that's a positive for the outlook for the ADs. There have been some challenges in the period, including the very wet period from October to February that impacted the tail end of the 2019 harvest and also created some difficulties with the spreading of digestate onto already sodden land. But generally, the portfolio has been resilient. In the future, we see the benefit of having additional capacity to deal with these kinds of events, and so we'll be looking to add storage capacity where viable. The solar portfolio was 3% below budget during a period that had good solar resource, and the main reason for this divergence was planned DNO activity over the period and also some major repairs carried out under warranty. So in terms of DNO activity, the Welsh sites in the CSGH portfolio and the Amber sites were particularly affected, and one of the sites in Wales, Shoals Hook, also experienced a prolonged period of being curtailed to 25% of maximum export. We engaged with the DNOs to minimise this disruption, and we were successful in reducing the impact by about half of their original plans, but it still impacted generation by over 2%. And the other major factor was the repair works, again carried out on the Welsh portfolio. These were works carried out under warranty to address corrosion concerns and involved replacement of enclosures and off-site treatment of some of the transformers. So that now improved the long-term outlook for the reliability of these sites, and generation was impacted by over 1% there. So absent these two events, we would have been on budget. We've recognised one further life extension within the portfolio, where we have the land rights to support a longer period of running. And so 5 out of 8 of the solar sites now have life extensions. The waste and wastewater PFI assets have been performing well. ELWA has been delivering very strong performance against the key diversion from landfill target, and also enjoys contractual protections against the offtake of refuse-derived fuel, which has been impacted by the imposition of a tax in the Netherlands on imported material. Tay has also been operating well with no major issues to report. Wastewater flows improved in the second half of the year with the wet winter that was experienced. And while the COVID pandemic has led to changes in working practices at site to ensure safe working, neither project has experienced a meaningful impact. Biocollectors, Chris has already touched on, that has seen some reduction in waste due to COVID. So just a word on the hydro assets. It's not a material part of the portfolio at the moment, and our experience is concentrated in the two sites that we currently hold. We like the sector for the relative simplicity of the technology and the revenue mix that gives us a high proportion of feed-in tariff revenue. The hydro assets have suffered during the year, however. Somewhat counterintuitively, the extreme rainfall that was experienced over the winter actually led to a reduction in the upstream and downstream pressure differential, and so generation suffered as a result. In terms of the battery system that's co-located, that's performed positively. And we've been able to continue to provide frequency response services on a short-term basis, even as its long-term two-year contract ran out. So that means that it's running ahead of its investment case, and we're also prepared for the day when it no longer makes financial sense to provide frequency services. and the battery switches to a trading strategy. Slide 21 is the valuation bridge, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. I'll talk about power price assumptions in a moment, as this has been the main negative factor on the valuation, reducing the value by nearly 57 million during the year. Economic assumptions such as inflation and tax has reduced the value by 13 million, and discount rate changes have added just short of 20 million. Balance of portfolio return is mainly made up of unwinding of the discount rate, but it also includes our value enhancement efforts. We've shown some of the more material ones there, including upgrades and life extensions. Slide 22 shows our long-term power price assumptions, and you can see how steep the decline has been over the course of the year. On a time-weighted average basis, the decrease is approximately 17% across the whole curve, and in the first 3 years, the average deduction is 26%. In arriving at these future price assumptions, we've used the curves that take into account consultants' views on the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic. So these curves don't predate the economic slowdown that we're currently experiencing, although no doubt the consultants will continue to refine their views as the full impacts become clearer. So we are insulated from this reduction to a degree due to the relatively high proportion of underlying revenues that come from sources other than selling power, and also the fixed price and floor arrangements that we have in place covering more than half of the book by generation in this current summer season. We also have a good level of fixed price and floor arrangements for the upcoming winter season in the event that power prices don't rebound into the winter. The implied real rate of growth is higher than the previous year, but that's simply a factor of the very low starting point. And as you can see, we assume no meaningful real growth in power prices over the medium to long term. Slide 23 is a new piece of analysis, so interested to receive feedback on it. It shows the changing mix of underlying project revenues that generate the fund's cash flows. And the table expresses those cash flows over time on an NPV basis. And so you can see that about 50% of lifetime portfolio revenues are fixed in nature. So that's the ROC revenues, the PFI revenues, and the renewable heat incentive revenues. And a further 26% of revenues enjoy some level of floor protection, so through PPAs or through the export tariff of FIT projects. Slide 24 on the key assumptions for the valuation. Macroeconomic changes have taken 13 million off the valuation. As previously flagged, reversing the proposed reduction in corporation tax caused about half of this, so we're now modelling a rate of 19%. And then the remainder of the reduction has come from changes to the outlook for inflation, particularly in the short term, as demand has shrunk due to the COVID lockdown. Our long-term assumption remains at 2.75, and now doesn't seem like an appropriate time to be increasing that to 3%, as we see in some other places in the market. Over the course of the year, we've revised the discount rates used for most of the renewable portfolio. We've reduced the wind and levered solar assets based on market benchmarks and Foresight's own experience of bidding for these assets. We've reduced the discount rates on some of the AD assets that have an established track record of good performance and good upgrade potential. But for this particular valuation, the only discount rates that we've changed are on the two grid scale FIT assets that we own. So these are the Amber sites and Pill Solar. And that's to reflect the additional protection that they have in low power price scenarios due to the FIT export tariff. Partially offsetting that valuation uplift from this is a reduction in the energy yield for the Amber solar sites. As we've reduced the discount rate, it's appropriate to reflect that this is an old asset by UK solar standards dating from 2011, and we've reduced energy generated by about 3% going forward. So the weighted average discount rate is now 7.4%, and with that change to the FIT assets, the discount rate range is now 6% to 9.2%. We've recognized more than 20 million from value enhancements during the year. These include cost savings achieved through portfolio retendering exercises, life extensions on a further two projects where we've now secured the land rights for longer operations, and an update to the energy yield assumptions for Carscrew following resolution of its recurring faults. We've concluded the Vulcan upgrade in the period, so that's also now fully reflected on an operational discount rate. And we have further upgrade opportunities and retendering exercises planned for the year ahead. So we continue to push on where we see scope for enhancements. Slide 26, JLEN is changing its dividend policy. For the year ahead, the dividend target has increased by 1.5% to 6.76p, and thereafter, the board intends to follow a progressive dividend policy. Future dividend growth will reflect factors such as power prices, inflation, and the wider market context rather than simply being linked to inflation. We think that this is a more sustainable dividend policy, although clearly JLEN's revenues remain strongly linked to inflation, and that gives a good level of underpinning to that progressive policy. Slide 27 presents the fund's sensitivities to various key risks. These should be pretty familiar by now. There are no material changes to the impact that these risks present to the fund's NAV. Slide 28 on gearing levels, again, pretty consistent with previous reporting periods, with the one change being the inclusion of the ungeared biocollectors asset within the waste and wastewater assets, so pulling down the aggregate gearing level of that part of the portfolio. We think that the most appropriate number for comparing us to peers is 28% for the renewables portfolio. That's relatively low for the sector, and that's the long-term debt on renewable assets themselves, and the waste and wastewater assets pull that up to 32%. And of course, all of this debt is long-term, fully amortizing debt with no refinancing risk and interest rate risk hedged out. Slide 29 is a summary of the NAV. Portfolio value is up through acquisitions, although impacted by the reduction in assumed future power prices. Cash is higher than we would expect due to having cash at hand for the acquisition of the Peace Hill AD plant that occurred just after year end, and the RCF with just under 30 million drawn at the year end, again, having been utilised for the Peace Hill acquisition. Shares in issue are up to 547 million following the issue of shares in March, and that gets us to a NAV per share of 97.5p. And slide 30 is a summary of fund cash flows. I don't propose to go through every line. Costs are fairly consistent with the previous year, and cash flow from operations is slightly up at 36.2 million, although what that really shows is that weak power prices have started to bite. And this cash flow from operations covers the dividends paid in the period of 32.9 million by 1.1 times. And if you're interested in cover for dividends declared for the period, that's also 1.1 times. Okay, I'll now hand back to Chris for outlook.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of outlook, despite the current impact of COVID-19 on the renewable energy markets and subsequent downward pressures on valuations as JLEN has experienced, there has been little discernible slowdown in acquisition opportunities coming to market. Now, this may be that vendors do not see any near-term bounce back in valuations, or that there are other dynamics such as EIS exit requirements or end-of-term fund timelines. And the continued strong competition we have seen in recent processes has not suggested any uplift in expected returns. More so, there's been a focus on protecting against downsides and structuring a more resilient base case, including where applicable, direct impacts of COVID-19. But deals are still closing, so, and including for JLEN, with the Peace Hill transaction that closed on April the 2nd. I think it's fair to say that there is renewed optimism across economies that investment into renewable energy and environmental infrastructure will increase. Many countries have set out clear targets to decarbonise their economies. The UK has its net zero by 2050 targets, of course. And we would expect to see new opportunities to invest as a result of this. And these opportunities are likely to arise in a number of different sectors, be it renewable energy generation, decarbonising transport or energy efficiency measures. And JLEN's broad mandate allows us to capture these and further the diversification in the portfolio. Indeed, we can see European investment opportunities becoming a more prominent feature of JLEN's pipeline. And whilst we haven't detailed here any specific acquisition targets, to give you a feel, Foresight considered nearly 500 investment opportunities during the reporting period. Now, a proportion of these would have been more suitable to other Foresight managed funds, but it demonstrates that there is a plentiful supply of deals in the market. In the short term, we are likely to continue investing into hydro, selective AD, and other forms of bioenergy, such as biomass and energy from waste, as we see value in these asset classes for the fund. And further ahead, it will make sense for JLEN to invest in this energy transition, whether that is battery storage, both co-location and standalone, or decarbonising our transport infrastructure. Overall, we believe the fund can continue building a resilient and diversified portfolio of assets whose performances follow different market dynamics and climatic conditions. So to wrap up, it's been a year where the fund has provided reliable income for investors during what has been challenging market conditions, and there are many positive takeaways. Our dividend cover remains healthy at 1.1 times. We continue to acquire assets that increase diversification, and our portfolio has generated above budget after a successful equity raise. We remain positive about the outlook for further investment. Well, thank you everyone for your participation. Chris and I, of course, are available after this call. Should you have any further questions, please do reach out and we'll be very happy to speak to you separately.